you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to a new episode of 49ers Talk on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your hosts, 49ers insider Matt Maiocco and 49ers host Laura Britt.
This is 49ers Talk brought to you by Big O Tires. I'm Matt Maiocco, joined by Laura Britt.
Yes, Matt. Every week, each and every week. I don't surprise you. I'm not like ducking you out. I promise. I'll be here each and every week.
Not only each and every week, twice a week.
That's true. That's true.
Get this right. We're going to do it.
Selling myself short.
Very, very short. Yes. And hey, but this week is different. This is Seahawks week. We talked a little bit about it after the game on Sunday when the 49ers did a number on the New England Patriots. But now we're only days away from the 49ers heading up to Seattle. And this is a great show, Laura. Not that all the others aren't, but this one is. This one has a special place in my heart because not only do you and I get to chat here in the opening, but we're joined by Dre Greenlaw, who, of course, had that great game last year, Week 17. And you know what Dre Greenlaw's Instagram handle is? Is that right? Is it called an Instagram
handle? Yeah, I think they're all handles. Yeah.
Screen name?
No, it's a handle. You're right.
You know what his handle is?
I did at one point. I can't remember.
It's Big Play Dre.
Big Play Dre, of course.
Big Play Dre. I think it's Big Play Dre 1. But the one who gave him that nickname, Big Play Dre, back in 2014 when he was a high schooler at Fayetteville High in Arkansas, Daryl Patton, his coach. So he's very proud of the football player and the man that Dre Greenlaw has become. And then, of course, we finish off this podcast, as we do in the second podcast of every week, with Taquio Spike. So when I say it's loaded, it is loaded.
A lot to talk about, especially with the Seahawks this week. At the beginning of the season, after the first few weeks, to be honest, I was really not looking forward to this stretch of games just because I had a feeling at the beginning of the season, as probably most 49ers fans did, that maybe this was going to be an ugly stretch of games. Now that we've seen what the 49ers have been capable of doing despite all the injuries, and it is a lot of injuries, I'm actually excited. I'm really excited to see these two teams go at it. The rivalry is alive and well, which I thought could have kind of been put to bed this year as the early part of the season went on, but that's not the case. I mean, this is going to be a fight against two really good teams, and I'm excited now for this game on Sunday.
Yeah, and they're two really good teams, I think, with some glaring problems. And with the 49ers, I think you mentioned it with the injuries. And with Seattle, they just have no pass rush. And they did something ahead of the trade deadline to acquire Carlos Dunlap from the Cincinnati Bengals. And he's one of these guys who's been in the league for 10 years. You can count on him every year to get about 8 sacks. And the Seahawks, that was a glaring weakness. So they didn't have to give up much. They gave up B.J. Finney, who was a center, an interior offensive lineman that they paid a lot of money to, but couldn't even crack the team's starting lineup. So they ship him to Cincinnati along with a late draft pick. And I know a lot of people.
The first question, Matt, everyone said on Twitter, I saw you were getting a ton of these questions. Why did the 49ers not do this? Why did the 49ers not do this? So I'll ask you, Maiocco, why did the 49ers not do this?
And I think it all comes to money. I mean, when you look at where the salary cap is right now, it's $198.2 million per team. Next year, it's probably going to fall to $175. And the 49ers are right up against the cap right now. So with Dunlap, you would have to pay him $4.5 million this year, and then he's on the books for $11 million next year. And you know, we've talked a lot about the salary cap and how the 49ers can't spend a lot of money because they got to hold some of that money back for some of their free agents. Well, in the last few weeks, I think a spotlight has really been directed at Fred Warner. And to me, Fred Warner for next year is what George Kittle was for this year. Fred Warner will be at the end of 3 years at the end of this season. So the 49ers can negotiate a new contract with him. He is a top flight player who will take a very big increase in salary. And so you got to start thinking ahead to guys like Fred Warner. You know, Mike McGlinchey's in that same boat, but I don't think that that would be near the priority that Warner is. And then you look at all the other free agents that they have, you know, Trent Williams, the left tackle. You have all those cornerbacks, Richard Sherman, Kaywan Williams, Jason Verrett, Emmanuel
Literally
Moses.
Almost all of them.
Yeah, pretty much all of them. Yeah. And then you also have Kyle Juszczyk, who's such an important part of this offense. You have DJ Jones and all, you know, both of their backup quarterbacks. So anyway, the 49ers, I don't think are in a position to be buyers at the trade deadline, especially with a big name guy, just because of how it would impact the salary cap and how it might impact their ability to keep some of those guys or re-sign some of those guys next year.
Yeah, and they've already had to do that. When they had the injuries to Nick Bosa, Solomon Thomas, I mean, I'm not even going to go through it all because I don't want to bore everybody and make everybody depressed because we've talked about it so much on this podcast. But they brought in Ziggy Ansah. They've brought in multiple people, and that costs money. So they've done that, but then the injuries just kept coming. And at some point, you have to stop the bleeding because you can't just keep shelling out the money knowing what lies ahead in the future, which is what you're talking about. At the end of the season, if you've learned anything from what Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch said last season after they lost to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, is that they really had a high priority on keeping this team together. And I don't think that changes that much at the end of this season. There are definitely some pieces that they're going to have to let go of, but the core of this team, which I believe Kyle Juszczyk is a piece of that, Fred Warner is a piece of that, the core of the team, they're still going to want to keep together, but it's going to get costly.
Yeah, and that's, I think that you touched on something there. I mean, you want to keep the guys you know what you're getting from basically all those guys that I listed. And instead of spending your money on a guy you don't know and you don't know exactly how he's going to fit in, when you've had success, you want to keep the guys that you know and you know exactly where they fit in. So, and we're going to talk about some of the injury situation and some of the guys recovering. But first, I want to tell you, Laura, that 49ers Talk is brought to you by FitAid, the number one workout recovery drink in America. See what I did there?
One dad joke.
Yeah. Try now and visit drinkfitaid.com. So some good news for the 49ers in the injury situation, because it looks like there's a possibility that more guys might be coming back to the lineup than leaving, which has not been the case at all this season. Well, the two guys leaving will be Deebo Samuel. He's out for a while with the hamstring injury. And then also Jeff Wilson, who did just such a tremendous job as the running back. He's out with a high ankle sprain. But the 49ers on Wednesday cleared the following three guys to begin practicing off of injured reserve. Okay, number one, Tevin Coleman. He's been out for 5 weeks. He returns to practice. Number two, Jordan Reed, a little bit of a surprise. He's been out 4 games. And then number three is Kaywan Williams. He's been out 3 games. Now, what Kyle Shanahan said was he hopes but doesn't necessarily expect those guys to be able to play on Sunday against Seattle, but he does expect all of them to be available for the following game, which is a Thursday night against the Green Bay Packers. So some of these guys starting to come back. So that's definitely good news for the 49ers.
Yeah, this is the part of the season that they need them back. But also if I'm Shanahan and the conditioning staff and all of that, I'm also thinking about how tough these games are going to be because you don't want to throw somebody out there that's not 100% ready to come back when you're looking at the Seahawks, the Packers, and the Saints back to back to back. So I think it's very exciting that they're going to start getting these pieces back. But you know, you're just a little cautious when you're on the 49ers side of things to make sure that they're ready to go.
Yeah, and they all obviously have major impacts on this team. You know, Jordan Reed, with Deebo Samuel coming, you know, out of the lineup, if Jordan Reed can come back, obviously he doesn't play wide receiver, but he gives the 49ers another pass-catching threat. He had gotten off to a really good start, a couple of touchdowns, 11 catches in, what, two and a half games, I think it was, nearly three games. So that's a huge bonus, and the ability for him to be out there on the field with George Kittle, that kind of creates some matchup problems. K'Wan Williams has been out, but Jamar Taylor stepped in and has done a really good job, including really a couple interceptions. Yeah. And then a running back is very interesting because the 49ers have no shortage of really good running backs, but now they kind of have a shortage if Tevin Coleman can't play. The two healthy guys are Jerick McKinnon and Jamichael Hasty.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have high expectations for Jamichael Hasty. I can't remember if we've talked about this on the podcast or not. So if we have, just remind me, Miyoko. But the 49ers...
We talked about it.
We
no,
did?
No, I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Really tried to kind of hide him because he is such a talented player, and people, other teams around the league were starting... They didn't want them to catch on to his talent because he was on the practice squad. And they didn't want people to snatch him from the practice squad. And exhibit A, this is why they didn't want people to snatch him from the practice squad.
Yeah, it's really a neat story because I think the 49ers would have had to have kept him on the 53-man at the beginning of the season had they had a preseason, because he's an impressive-looking guy. He's 5'8", 205 pounds. He's strong. He runs very well, change of direction, catches the ball out of the backfield, is very good in blitz pickup as well. And it was kind of funny. It was kind of like the unspoken thought, but I think it was actually spoken. The 49ers didn't want to put him out there during training camp, and kind of they didn't want to promote him or give him much attention because they were afraid that the other 31 teams, not having the film to watch the preseason, were reading all of our reports. All the reporters who cover the team are out there at practice. They were afraid that the more positive stuff that was written about him, the more it would open the possibility that one of those teams would say, hey, we need a running back. Boy, those reporters in San Francisco, we don't know if they know what the heck they're talking about or not, but they sure are giving a lot of pub to this Jamichael Hasty. Maybe we should go get him.
Yeah, that's what happened. I wasn't on that call, but I know some people who know some people who were on that call. And you understand why. I mean, this is all about, you know, scheming, and without the preseason, how much that changed this season. And that's something that we talked about leading up to the season. You're not going to really know what you're getting. You're not going to be able to snag guys from other teams. And that, I mean, this is a perfect example of that. And I think, to go back to your point about Jordan Reed a moment ago, a lot of Kyle Shanahan's scheming and offensive success comes on decoys. Shiny object over here, shiny object over here. And it's because they're also talented, so that opposing defenses understand what Kyle Juszczyk, what Jordan Reed, what George Kittle, you know, what Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk all have the capability of doing when the ball is in their hands. But that's where, you know, getting a Jordan Reed back, having Jamichael Hasty, who's so talented, in there, able to plug in players that are talented to create the decoys. Because I think when you start to see the 49ers not do as well offensively is when they're down a lot of those talented players. And then that takes – I hear Dante talk about this a lot. The defense needs to have fear. If they don't have fear of those players, then that takes away a lot of what Kyle Shanahan's able to do.
Yeah, I wanted to tell a quick Jamichael Hasty story, and we'll talk to Takiyo a little bit later about the possibility of Hasty and Jerick McKinnon, who are two really good route running backs out of the backfield, how they might be able to exploit those older inside linebackers for the Seahawks. Are both really good players, both linebackers, KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner. But Jamichael Hasty, after he got elevated from the practice squad week three against the Giants and stepped in late in the game and played a couple snaps and did some good things. In fact, Shanahan called this pass play for the running back, thinking that McKinnon was in the backfield, and he looked up and it was actually Jamichael Hasty. And Shanahan realizes after the play has already been called that they never gave Jamichael Hasty that practice snap. So he was running that play for the very first time, and he catches a pass, nice catch, and gains 9 yards. But after that game, because he went back to the practice squad, teams can sign players off of other teams' practice squads as long as they put them on the 53-man roster. But the player can, you know, it's up to the player. And so a couple of teams, the agent wouldn't tell me which teams, came to them and said, we want to sign Hasty. And Jamichael's like, man, I really like it here. This fits my, you know, style. I don't want to leave. And Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch told him, hey, look, we can't promise you that you're going to be on the 53-man. And we're talking about a very significant pay raise going from the practice squad to the 53-man. But they were upfront with him. They said, we can't make you any promises, but we like you a lot, and we do want to keep you around, and you do fit into our plans. And Hasty took a leap of faith and said, okay, I'm going to stay here. And the very next week, with the injuries kind of piling up, Jamichael Hasty's on the 53-man, and now heading up to this game in Seattle, there is a very good possibility that even if he doesn't start, he's going to see a lot of playing time right there along with Jerick McKinnon.
I think that story, reading about it, you can read it on the My Teams app, NBCSportsBayArea.com. You and Jennifer Lee Chan have covered that. About Jamichael Hasty. It speaks volumes about the culture within the 49ers, and it's something we talk about consistently 365 days a year, every 2 times we do this podcast every week. But I think it speaks a lot about what Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have built and are building, because players want to be here. And it's one thing to want to be somewhere. It's another thing to say, I'm not going to take, I don't know, however many hundreds of thousands of dollars or thousands of dollars of a pay raise to stay somewhere, yeah, right? To take that risk. I mean, that takes a lot of faith, a lot of belief in a system, a lot of belief in that I love being here to not do that, because you got to put yourself in those shoes. That's tough to do.
Yeah. And Kyle Shanahan is pretty persuasive. You know, he was like, well, you know, this is just a short term, you know, pay raise for you if you go to another team, but how you make like generational type of money is on your second contract. So be in the position, be with the team, be in the system where you have a better chance of getting that second contract. And I mean, we see what the 49ers have done in what Kyle Shanahan has done with running backs, that this clearly is the best situation for a lot of running backs, especially the running backs where the 49ers say, we want to keep you. That means that you fit. And if you fit, you're going to be productive.
Yeah. And I think, again, that just speaks a lot to this team and the culture that they have within the locker room, especially that running back room. That was something that I hated to see kind of disbanded last season with Breida going to the Dolphins. And it seems that they've been able to find pieces very similar personality wise, which is important when you're talking about units within a football team. And I'm happy that he's getting his moment, and I hope he kills it out there.
Yeah. Hey, Laura, I'll let you go here because I'm just going to turn the show over to Dre Greenlaw, Daryl Padden, and Takiyo Spike. So if you don't mind, I mean, you can just kind of hang out in the green room and check it out. But man, I don't even really have to do much either, because these guys are going to just carry the show from here.
Yeah, light lifting for me. I'm going to enjoy sitting back and listening to these conversations.
Yeah, and you have a lot of work to do too, because you got to prep for what will be so far the game of the year, 49ers and Seahawks. It always is a great game. Always all kinds of weirdness happens whenever these teams play. So you got to get ready for 49ers Central, 49ers pregame, postgame, you name it. You cover it on NBC Sports Bay Area.
Bring your car to someone you know. Big O Tires. Now through November 1st, save $100 instantly on sets of 4 select tires with installation purchase. Plus, get a $50 mail-in rebate on purchases of $500 or more on your Big O credit card. Big O Tires. The team you trust.
We're joined on 49ers Talk by Dre Greenlaw, a second-year player. But, Dre, you've already played a lot of football in your young career, 14 games as a rookie, as a starter, including three in the postseason. So do you feel like a second-year guy, or do you feel like you have that kind of veteran savvy now?
You know, I still at times I still feel like, you know, a second-year player just because I got so much to learn. You know, I'm doing well as far as picking up the defense, but, you know, there's still a little stuff that as far as details that I can get better on. So, you know, I just kind of, you know, look at the older guys like Fred and Quan and, you know, and the jumps that they made and how much they got better from, you know, their second year to this year, their first year to second year. And I just, you know, I just try to, you know, do that and get as good as I possibly can. But, I mean, and then there's times when I do, you know, I go out there and like last week and, you know, Quan got hurt and he's like, up, you're up. You know, it's like second man up. So, you know, when it's just like times like that is when I kind of feel like, okay, well, you know, I can't be, you know, a second year player if I can just, you know what I mean? I feel pretty good about, you know, where I was at and everything. So, yeah.
Was there a point last year as a rookie where, you know, you had to step in and play in the weak side spot after Quan was injured? Was there a point where it kind of clicked for you and you felt like, oh yeah, you know, I got this. I know what I'm doing and I can be a solid contributor on a very good defense.
It was mostly towards, I guess it was about week eight when I started playing. I want to say until maybe about week 12, I think, you know, Arizona, or maybe that second time we played LA. That's when I really got a good comfort, a good feel for the position. You know, when you first go back, you know, from Sam to Will or Will to Sam, you know, it's like it's some of the same things, but, you know, sometimes like some calls can get screwed up and you think you're doing this, but you're really at this position. And so sometimes, you know, it definitely takes a little while to get adjusted to. But, you know, after a couple of weeks, you know, I had played it throughout the whole spring and OTA. So after about a couple of weeks until, you know, the season last year is when I felt a little more comfortable and was able to play a lot faster.
Well, one of the things that, you know, after your rookie year, you can really take some time in the off season to figure out what you need to get better for your second year, because I would assume as a rookie, your head just kind of spinning, learning the defense and learning the game plan from week to week. What were you able to do this off season with COVID? That had to have kind of set you back a little bit as far as just taking care of the business that you wanted to take care of before your second season.
I think the hardest part with COVID was just more about the physical part, you know, just not having, you know, a gym, access to a gym 24/7 and, you know, not having a specific trainer come out there and kind of like help you and, you know, push you and, you know, give you, you know, the little things to do. Because, I mean, a lot of times when you're working out by yourself, you don't realize, you know, the little details that, you know, that other people may have you doing. You don't see the big picture of it, but I mean, it makes a big difference. But I mean, for me, it was really about getting to the film and understanding the defense more. And I felt like I was able to do that throughout COVID. If anything, I got more time to be able to really look at these past games for the past, you know, past year and just kind of look at myself and, you know, just see my movement and see, you know, when people are motioning and making sure I'm getting in line fast and, you know, just different things like that. And I think, you know, being able to have so much time off and having, you know, with, you know, COVID hitting, I think I was able to, you know, really just learn a lot more about myself and about this defense. And I think it helped.
Hey, Dre, let me take you back to your days at Fayetteville High School in Arkansas, where you were known there as Big Play Dre. Your coach, Daryl Padden, gave you that nickname. What did you think when you first heard that nickname? I mean, I went back to, like, it looks like 2014 you were being called Big Play Dre. So this goes back quite a ways.
Oh, no doubt. just I believe it's that year is when I really excelled and really started learning about football. You know, I only had played a couple years previous, but you know, once I got the hang of, I was at safety at the time, and once I got the hang of, you know, the position, and once I started understanding what football is exactly and, you know, fits and everything, you know, I remember reading a newspaper one time, and I was on the front of the newspaper, and my coach was like, yeah, I mean, he's big play Dre. And, you know, from that time on, it kind of just stuck. And, you know, I wasn't trying to, like, you know, keep it or anything, but it was just like, you know, as the year went on, you know, plays kept being made, and, you know, and he kept saying big play Dre. And I mean, eventually everybody started, you know, catching on to it. And I mean, it's kind of been sticking with me since, all the way back to, you know, like you said, high school. And, you know, even at Arkansas, you know, was able to make some plays, and, you know, and now hopefully being able to continue and do it in the NFL.
Did that nickname, how did that help you? With self-esteem, you know, everybody knows your background, you grew up in foster care. Did that help you? Did that give you even more juice to go tackle life, not just the game of football? I mean, that's gotta be a pretty neat thing whenever you look at a paper as a high school student and you see your head coach is calling you big play Dre.
Oh no, definitely. It definitely, you know, just boosts my confidence, my self-esteem. And it just made me want to go out there and make those big plays. And, you know, especially in high school when, you know, the whole, you know, city's on your back and, you know, everybody's coming out to watch the game. And you just, I mean, you just, it's the first start of, you know, for me, just the love of the game. And I just wanted to do everything in my power just to go out there and make those big plays. And, you know, the longer the season went, and as the season went on, like, I just got that confidence and just kept rolling, and big play Dre stuck.
Well, we're heading into week 8, 49ers heading up to Seattle, and we can't think about big play Dre and not mention the last time you went to Seattle. 4th and goal at the 5, basically the last play of the game. What did that play mean to you, stopping Jacob Hollister at the 1-inch line and sending you guys to the division title and home field advantage? What did that, in retrospect, do for your career?
I don't really know what it did for my career. but for me, it just I think it did give me motivation. It gave me confidence. Just to know that I can make those hits in the NFL and that I belong here. You know, at that time, it was very, like, kind of like a wild moment, because not that I was shocked that I made it, but I was shocked more about, you know, how big it was. And I didn't realize it at the time, but for us to get that bye week was huge. And, you know, just, I mean, it was just like an unbelievable moment, an indescribable moment. And, you know, once I made the tackle, I knew he was short, and, you know, everybody wasn't sure at the time, but I knew. And, you know, once they called him short, I was just, you know, just happy to see the excitement from my teammates and coaches and, from, you know, the whole state of California, really. And, it was just, I mean, it was an exciting moment. It was fun.
From the time that you saw that, you know, the pre-snap, you know, when you see the formation, when you see the motion to the snap of the ball to the end of the play, did it happen so quickly in your mind? Or when you think of it, did it happen slowly? Did you see it all materialize?
I mean, they came out – when they came out, I mean, I want to say it happened slowly, but, I mean – it was just one of those moments where it was quick reaction. And, I mean, once I was finna get ready to tackle him, I saw he had just caught the ball and he had just looked, and I was finna go in for the tackle. And, I mean, it was such a quick moment, because, you know, anything less would have been, you know, touchdown. So, I mean, in that moment, you know, I saw the quarterback eyes just go look straight to him, and, you know, he's been trying to hit Hollister on the goal line a couple times before that, and I know that was his target to go to down here in the red zone. So, I mean, it was just a great job for my coaches telling me to keep my feet inside the goal line and, you know, just being reactive to what I see. And, I mean, it was very quick. I mean, it was quick the way it happened.
It's an amazing play when you watch it, because Travis Homer, the running back, you're kind of lined up on, right, just outside right. of the hash mark, and you do take a couple shuffles with him because I'm assuming you have – he's part of your responsibility, and then you just immediately swing back right as Hollister is catching the ball. So, you know, where were your eyes on that play? Was Homer the running back, number 25, was he your first guy that you really had to kind of make sure that he wasn't going to beat you on that play?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was a curl player, so I had that part of the curl. And once I saw him go to the flat, you know, I was expecting a slant from the backside. And that's usually, you know, what a lot of teams do. They try to send somebody out to the flat. You know, hopefully you go follow them and then, you know, try to hit a curl or a slant, you know, something behind you. So that's what made me move out, was because he expanded my curl. And once I saw that, you know, I kind of felt the slant not being there. It's kind of more of a feeling thing. I felt the slant not being there and the quarterback wasn't looking for the slant. I was able to get my feet set. And I mean, after I had, you know, pushed him and my curl drop, and by the time I looked back at the quarterback, he was locked on to Hollister, ready to throw the ball. So I just reacted.
So how many text messages were waiting for you by the time you got back to the locker room?
Too many. I had to change my number. It was tough.
Were you able to get back to very many people?
Yeah, I tried to get back to – I mean, if somebody texted me and got my number, then I try to get back to everybody as much as possible. So, I mean, if I didn't, I'm sorry, but – I tried to.
Okay, so that's where you're putting the word out now. Anybody watching this who texted you and you didn't respond to?
No doubt.
You're sorry. And how long have you had that number before you had to change it?
Since ninth grade.
Oh, wow. So
yeah, so I've had it for a while, yeah.
But you just had to change it.
I had to change it, man. I was getting crazy phone calls, and I think I had it on Facebook whenever I first originally signed up, and I was getting block calls, like people wouldn't call me and then they won't say nothing. I'm just like, all right, it's time.
Dre, as you finish out this season, where can you take your game? You know, what are you expecting for yourself for as long as, you know, you're asked to start and for this team? I mean, it's already, we've seen some crazy stuff happen through the first part of the season. So what do you expect of yourself and your team here to wrap up 2020?
I mean, I expect us to play hard, you know, for the rest of 2020. And I mean, we've had some shortcomings and we had some tough losses that, you know, I think really woke us up. And, you know, with, you know, the way the season is being played out with a lot of people being hurt, you know, it's a lot of stuff that we couldn't control. But I think the man that we got on this team is going to fight until they can't fight no more. And I know I am. So, I mean, we all love to play the game and this is what we do. So, I mean, I'm just going to give it all I got till I ain't got no more, because, I mean, it's the organization that came and, you know, got me in the fifth round. So it's only right that, you know, I give them everything I got, every snap. So, you know, I think that's for me and for the rest of the guys. So, yeah.
All right. Hey, Dre, thank you very much for joining us on 49ers Talk, and good luck the rest of the season.
All right. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
All right. A big thanks to Dre Greenlaw for spending some time with us to talk about the nickname Big Play Dre, and of course, his big play last season, week 17, when the 49ers went to Seattle. 49ers Talk is brought to you by Wendy's Breakfast, a breakfast so good you'll want to tell someone about it. Well, I wanted to talk to Daryl Patton, the coach at Fayetteville High, about the origin of Big Play Dre. And also, you heard Dre Greenlaw refer to his time in foster care. He had been in foster care from the time he was 8 years old, and he went in with the Early family, Brian and Nancy Early, and their two young daughters. And Early was on Patton's staff, his coaching staff at Fayetteville High. So this goes back quite a ways, and the Early family adopted Dre Greenlaw shortly after his 21st birthday. And in Dre Greenlaw's first season with the 49ers, he was asked to speak at the Santa Clara County Foster Youth Graduation Ceremony at Levi's Stadium. So when you take all the stuff that Dre Greenlaw has done on the field, all the obstacles he's overcome off the field, you can begin to understand why Darrell Patton, his high school football coach, is so very proud of everything that he has done. So here's my conversation with Darrell Patton talking about Big Play Dre. All right, I'm joined on 49ers Talk by a man who coached Big Play Dre in high school. Not only coached him, but he's the one responsible for the nickname. I bring in Darrell Patton. Darrell, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Matt. Go 49ers.
Yeah, I bet there's a lot of 49er fans where in that neck of the woods where you are right now.
There wasn't until just a couple of about a year and a half ago. Now it's all 49ers.
Yeah. So tell me, you coached Dre Greenlaw in high school. What position did he play?
Well, when he first came up, he played cornerback for us as a sophomore, and we were a state championship team, and he was a very talented player. But you know, he wasn't the Big Play Dre at that time. He was still kind of learning the position. As a junior, we moved him to safety in a 4-2-5 defense. And because everywhere we had talked to in college, they all said, well, you got to have a great safety in that 4-2-5. And so we put him back there and kind of turned him loose. Very aggressive player, but he got beat a few times because of his aggressiveness. But you started seeing some of that big play capabilities. And I can tell you right now how he got the nickname, or I can wait until you ask that question.
It seemed like you look at his stats and the tackles, the interceptions, he had punt return yards, kickoff return yards. I mean, did you use him on offense as well?
Well, now his junior year, he played strictly defense, defense and special teams. And the way he got his nickname, Matt, was we were playing a team, Rogers Heritage. And it was probably about week 6, week 7 of the season. And, you know, we were probably 5-1, 6-1, somewhere like that. And Rogers Heritage was not a great team. And we probably our kids overlooked them a little bit. Well, they went up on us late in the game, 27-21. And, I mean, when I say late in the game, it was probably 25, 30 seconds left in the game. And they kicked off deep to us. And Dre took it, I want to say it was 93 yards. But he took it back for a touchdown. And so when that game was over with, that's when I kind of started calling him, hey, Big Play Dre, Big Play Dre. And it was we didn't use it a lot, but it was a little bit. But then as we went into the summer, we started putting him on offense some. And I've never heard of a kid that scored touchdowns, fumble recovery, return for a touchdown, interception return for a touchdown, punt return, kickoff return. He threw touchdown passes, he caught touchdown passes, and he ran touchdowns. The only thing he didn't do was kick extra points, and I probably should have done that with him.
You know, I don't even know if you know this, but, you know, well, the people here are very familiar with his life, you know, how he grew up in foster care. But he said that hearing that nickname, Big Play Dre, well, you know, gave him a boost of confidence and his self-esteem. Were you aware that, I mean, was there kind of some method behind what you were doing to give this kid that kind of spark in life?
Well, number one, Dre, I love Dre. Everybody that comes across Dre or comes, you know, in contact with him, you can't help but love him. His personality is contagious. His smile is contagious. And I fell in love with him. I mean, the kid just, he was one that I just really, truly loved. And his senior year, I don't know if he knows this or not, but, you know, I was constantly talking to the Razorbacks, Coach Bielema and Coach Smith and those guys about recruiting Dre. And we had a really good relationship with the Razorback coaches. You know, we had probably 7 or 8 kids already over there. And they kept saying, we just don't think he's good enough. We just don't think he's quite SEC caliber. And I kept telling them, I said, you're missing out. This kid's one of the best, if not the best kid we've had come through here. And so we're getting ready to play Fort Smith Southside during the regular season. And Rob Smith came down to Fort Smith to watch the game. And I'm talking to him before the game. And he's like, well, you know, we've got one scholarship left. We're kind of just, you know, we're here to evaluate. And I told him, I said, when you leave here, you're going to offer him. And well, I didn't know. Little did I know Dre would have three. I mean, I'm talking about circus interceptions, one-handed catches, acrobatic catches. And when the game was over with, Coach Smith told me, who's the defense coordinator at Arkansas all the time, he said, how did we miss this kid? And so they offered Dre. And at the time, he had been offered by, I think, like Northern Illinois, Arkansas State, Memphis, some smaller schools. So Arkansas offered, and when he went there, I told Coach Bielema, I said, you know, this kid, he'll be a starter for you. Well, you know, I was kind of probably sticking my neck out a little bit, but the kid, everything he touches, it seems like turns to gold. I mean, because he works hard at it, he's got great confidence. I didn't know the big play Dre moniker was going to give him confidence, but you could just see every day he got better, and he won the day. And when he went to Arkansas, they moved him to linebacker. They wanted him to gain weight. He gained weight. He made freshman All-American, and the rest is history. But I'm just very proud of the young man.
Yeah, and obviously we know him here in San Francisco as Big Play Dre because of what he did week 17 up in Seattle. Right. NFC West title on the line for the 49ers, home field advantage on the line. That was Sunday Night Football. I would assume you were watching and kind of take me through what was going through your mind on that final play, the 4th and 5 that Seattle had.
Well, me and my wife is a huge 49er fan, and Dre Green shattered 49ers shirt on. And so we're sitting here on our edge of our seats. And when the play happened, you know, at first I didn't know that was Dre that made the tackle. And so then I said, oh, my God, that was Dre. That was Dre that stopped him on the one-inch line and won the ball game. And we were jumping up and down. I was texting him and calling him and leaving him messages how proud I was of him. And, you know, just a huge play. I mean, that's the way Dre is. He's always in the right place at the right time.
And it's got to be just so rewarding for you to see just how he's doing. Not just, and I'm not just talking about football, just the inspiration he is combined with the great football talent and how, you know, he came in as kind of an under-the-radar guy with the 49ers, and it didn't take him long to earn his way.
Well, I'm very proud of Dre because, you know, he's got a platform with his job with the 49ers, he's got a huge platform that really can help foster kids across America. And because, I mean, his background, I mean, story's well known. I mean, he didn't have it easy. And, you know, when he was a 9th grader, Coach Early was one of my coaches, defense coordinator for us. And I remember, you know, Coach Early talking to me about him. And he had a, you know, that freshman year was a tough year for him. And when they started, you know, became foster parents and really got him in that sophomore year, you know, there was a few tough moments for sure. But Dre, he loved the discipline and the structure. And just to see him blossom and get better each and every day. And to hear him speak now, because, you know, or in the beginning, he did not do a good job really speaking to the media. And he got better as a junior, got better as a senior in high school. And when he went to college, I was always very impressed with him when he was talking at the SEC media days or whatever it might be. He's one to always give praise to his teammates. He's a very humble young man. And when I heard him talk to the foster kids of the Bay Area, that was huge. And I'm just very proud of him.
Yeah. Well, hey, Coach Padden, thank you very much for sharing your story. And I'm sure you'll continue to be following the 49ers, you and your wife, from afar.
Well, we will. Matt, thank you for having me on. And tell Dre I'm proud of him. And tell him to give his old coach a call every once in a while.
Okay, I will do that. You know he has a new number.
Well, you know, that's what I need to know because the number I tried for – I wanted him to do some type of FaceTime or something with me for my new team. Uh-huh. You know, because a lot of the kids I have, I mean, they have identical stories to Dre. And I texted him probably about 2 months ago, and I never heard back from him. I'm like, that's not Dre. So I probably need to get that number from you sometime. So.
Okay, that sounds good. All right, Coach, thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
Are you faithful to the Bay? 49ers 2021 season tickets are available now and locations are filling up quickly. Lock in your seats with a deposit today to secure your spot for next season. For more information, visit 49ers.com/season tickets.
All right, good stuff from Daryl Padden, Dre Greenlaw's high school football coach, as we get set for the 49ers to return to Seattle to face the Seattle Seahawks in a very big game, a Week 8 game, not Week 17 like last season when Dre Greenlaw made that stop of Jacob Hollister at the one-inch line. But a big game nonetheless, and here to break it down, as he does every Thursday on 49ers Talk, is Takiyo Spikes. All right, we're back on 49ers Talk, and I'm joined, as I am every week, by NBC Sports Bay Area analyst and the guy behind the mask of Behind the Mask podcast, Takiyo Spikes. Takiyo, how are you?
Matt, always a pleasure, my friend. Doing very well.
And, hey, we got a good one coming up. I mean, I think all these games coming up for the 49ers are going to be fun to watch. Certainly the last two games have been, 49ers have played some good football. So now they're trying to carry that over into a really big matchup, heading up to Seattle to face a very quiet CenturyLink field, something that they've never experienced going up there. But it should be a really good measuring stick, probably for both teams, to kind of see where they stack up now in the NFC West.
I do believe so, and especially with you hearing about some of the additions that some guys may be coming back. Kaywan Williams, mm-hmm. He may be coming back. So, you know, when you look at it overall, Jordan Reed, another guy that comes to mind, I think it builds more excitement to this game because this is the type of game to where you can truly say you got to take out everything that they've done in previous games, as much as we hold on to that, or what they haven't done in previous games. And the only thing that matters is this game, is because it's a rivalry game. One thing that we do know is you have to understand the constants, things that you're always going to get. You look at the certain matchups. Man, I tell you what, Russell Wilson is playing some outstanding ball. Even though he threw three interceptions last week, I still can't judge or, like, really blame his game as a bad performance. That's the type of plays that he's been making, and he consistently gets better. And you just look at what the 49ers have been able to do over the previous 2 weeks after losing the big one to Miami. And these guys are locked in, and they understand the significance to this game.
So we had Dre Greenlaw on the podcast a little bit earlier. And, you know, when you look at Dre Greenlaw and Fred Warner, how much responsibility falls on those inside linebackers to keep Russell Wilson in check?
A lot. And I'll be completely honest with you, when you look at this 49ers defensive football team, they will be the maintain the prior guys who will be prioritized to make sure they keep Russell Wilson inside of the pocket. When you go back and you look at the breakdown and you see, okay, when does Russell is most effective, not just throwing the football down the field, but converting on third down when it's third and 6-10, like what type of damage does he do? He's averaging 8 yards a carry when he gets into scrambles. And so that's the reason why their percentage is so high on third down, is that they've been doing a good job, or he's been doing a good job of recognizing, I know, I understand the matchup is one-on-one with me and the backer. And as long as I can buy time, I know I'm athletic enough not only to keep my eyes down the field, but I can make plays with my legs and extend the play.
That's the crazy thing about him. It doesn't matter what the distance is on third down, and it doesn't matter what happens at the snap of the ball. It could look like, well, this play is going nowhere for Seattle, and somehow he manages to convert third downs. Or it just seems like he always has a chance until the whistle blows to convert that third down. And that's got to be extremely difficult on defenses to know that, you know, there are probably about 3 or 4 plays in the course of just one play that defensive guys have to defend.
Yeah, and I'll break it down even more for you. When you look at Russell Wilson and defensively, if you're the 49ers, I think about Javon Kinlaw. this is the game to where I would like to see him take the next step as far as compressing the pocket up underneath whenever he has the opportunity to be in the three technique or be one-on-one with the center. He has to win, and they need to get more out of him up the middle as far as increasing that presence. But if you don't, this is what scares me about Russell Wilson. We all know what he can do, just dropping back, throwing it. But the scary thing is, to your point, he is dangerous when people are holding on to him and he's like about to fall and he's throwing side. Like it's just unfair. Like, it's, to be honest with you, it's like, I'm not afraid of Russell Wilson if he lines up and throws in rhythm within like 2.8, 3.2 seconds. I just don't feel like that's going to kill me. What kills you is when he's breaking tackles and you look like, how in the hell is he throwing that football? That's when Russell Wilson is at his best. And it's almost like he practices that in the offseason. I don't know how he does it, but he, like, you don't have any pressure. So that's the dangerous thing about Russ.
So, you know, we heard Tony Romo last week on the broadcast really talk of Javon Kinlaw, and you mentioned Kinlaw there. Now, he doesn't have big stats. He doesn't, at the end of the game, he doesn't have a whole lot of tackles. He hasn't had a sack yet. But how do you measure the success of a player in his position? And you kind of touched on it a little bit, but how can he really impact this game even without showing up in the stat sheet?
Well, and this is the thing that I've seen early on in the beginning, at, you know, in the first few games of the year. You just saw a guy out there. You could still tell he was trying to process things, and he was doing what he was told. Now, the more and more that I've seen him over the previous 2 weeks, he's starting to be more active. Before the camera cuts off, even on the TV copy, you're starting to see him coming around that pile. He understands where plays are going. And so when you see a guy who's always in the frame, when you cut the camera off, it lets you know and understands that he understands the big picture. So I think he's starting to get it. That's going to be the big thing. And the best way for him to make his presence shown is to do some things that he has not done. And that is get his first sack. Or even if he don't come up on the stat sheet, I think it's vitally important that he's able to, when Russell was going to scramble, which we all know that he is, compress that pocket up the middle so he doesn't get any little lanes to where he still can look down the field and drop those dimes in to lock it.
Do those defensive linemen, Javon Kinlaw and all the guys, do they have to approach this differently? I mean, week one they played Kyler Murray, and he and Russell are stylistically kind of the same. But since then, the 49ers have faced Sam Darnold, Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Jared Goff, Cam Newton can run, runs a lot, you know, gets a lot of yards, but he's not that kind of, I don't know, I'd almost call it like point guard quickness, right? Kind of that kind of lateral quickness to make guys miss. So what are the defensive linemen in particular have to do when getting after Russell Wilson?
Well, it's, you know, what they really have to do is just understand we can't be hesitant in our assignment, in our rushing lanes. We have to go. Like, that's who we are. That's the DNA. That's what we've been trained to do. However, you need to be mindful while you're rushing. Don't get into the picture of, this is where you fall into trouble. When you look at rushing on third down, second down, when you know they're going to pass it, if you get in the mindset that I have to beat the guy in front of me, that ain't the way you rush against Russell Wilson. You have to understand, not only do I have to beat him, but I have to understand where the pressure is called from. I have to understand where we are weak when we have rush lanes. And so that way, as a defensive lineman or as a blitzer, you're mindful of where the pressure is coming from and where he could possibly escape. It's up to him to find out where the weakness of the defense is at after the ball is snapped. It's up to you to know that before the snap and be able to adjust while you're in your attack area.
So now on the other side of the ball, the 49ers are going to be facing a Seattle defense that isn't very good, at least statistically, it's not very good so far this season. And you know, when you look at Seattle's defense and you think of Seattle's defense, you often think of the Legion of Boom. Well, all those guys are gone. You think of that pass rush that they had. All those guys are gone. Two of the constants, Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, they're still here. What have you admired about the pairing of those two guys on that defense, and where are they now in their careers? Are they the same players that they have been for so long for Seattle?
I'm not going to say they're the same players, and I'm not going to say they are the same players that they were back then. But what I will say is they're more seasoned guys, which they still have value add every time they step on the football field. And so I think they make up for a lot of things from not having that young exuberance, from just the mental side of the game, understanding, similar to when I was talking about defensive linemen, understanding where the weakness of the defense is at before the ball is snapped. And so when I look at these two guys and to understand that they have been a very integral part of the plan, they're one of the only few teams, Matt, that still runs nickel. Two linebackers on passing situations, damn near on all downs. And so what that means is, even though they are in there and they are effective, that means they have the opportunity to be taken advantage of when you look at Kyle Shanahan's offense. I went back and I did a chart. I wanted to dig deep for you because I try to give you something every week.
All right, so, I appreciate that. Let's hear it. So,
this is what I found out. When you look at what part of the field or what yardage on third down to where you can exploit certain people, in particular linebackers, if they're going to be on the field. This is a team, as I mentioned, they're going to have both guys on. Out of 83 plays that the 49ers have had from third to 1 to 5, they have converted 61% for third downs. And so what that tells me is, one, on first and second down, they are getting chunk yardage, putting these teams in that in-between zone to where defensive coordinators are scared because they don't know whether or not to go man or whether or not to go zone, because the 49ers run it even better. That percentage goes up even more. If you look at it from 1 to 4 yards, it goes up to 69%. So it's damn near 7 out of 10 times that the 49ers are in this yardage, they're going to convert for the first down. How you do that, you look at the two running backs that they have. Jerick McKinnon is one. I really like – to me, I know he had the knee surgeries, and I get the opportunity to see him every offseason. Actually played – I don't think I played against him, but we trained together. And this guy still has his quickness. And so I think when Kyle, as we always talk about, he understands how to find guys to create mismatches, he will find that one-on-one situation. He will understand, okay, if it's not the captain, Bobby Wagner, it will be KJ. And when KJ Wright is out there, I've seen a few times, he struggles with guys who have quickness. And if you put Jared out there in the slot or put him in the backfield and run him out, I truly believe this will be the best opportunity for these guys, the backs, to catch the ball out of the backfield, whether or not if it's the screen game or whether or not if it's one-on-one opportunity creating those positions.
Yeah, so McKinnon and Jamichael Hasty, the undrafted rookie from Baylor, those two guys are basically the only two running backs we know of right now who are healthy. We'll see about Tevin Coleman. He returned to practice on Wednesday, but we don't know yet. We'll see probably later in the week whether he can play. So those guys, that could be a matchup for the 49ers to exploit. Whether it's McKinnon or Hasty, they both run those choice routes and they got fresh legs. So that'll be something to watch on Sunday, won't it?
Yeah, it will be. And best believe, like on the defensive side, you know that. But that's the thing that, you know, we talked about last week. Hey, you know, what's going through the mind of certain players when you play against Bill Belichick? Well, you know that if you're the weakest link, he's coming at you. Well, it's the same thing when you play against Kyle Shanahan. He's going to exploit guys who just don't play well when it comes to certain matchups. So best believe they understand that. And as the defensive coordinator of Seattle, they have to be able to understand down and distance and know when to be able to take the other linebacker out, KJ Wright, replace him with the dime safety, or a dime, another dime nickel guy who you could put inside and have him to be able to match up in that manner.
Well, it should be fun, and you'll be joining the pregame show on NBC Sports Bay Area at 9 a.m., postgame show right after the game. So, Takeo, I look forward to checking in with you on Sunday morning and then break it all down Sunday evening after the game.
Oh, we are all in, man. All in.
Thanks for listening to 49ers Talk with Matt Maiocco and Laura Britt. Please rate, review, and subscribe for free on your podcast provider.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.